Hello and welcome to another edition of Alternative Press Review. I'm Randy Goodwangen. This week we're continuing in the September 30th issue of The Nation magazine. We're going to hear a piece titled Think the Green New Deal is Pricey? The Costs of Climate Inaction Are Even Greater. This is written by Joshua Holland, H-O-L-L-A-N-D. Recently, the Democratic National Committee rejected calls for a presidential primary debate dedicated to climate change. DNC Chair Tom Perez argued that focusing on climate change alone would be unfair to those whose campaigns are more focused on other issues, which might be a compelling argument if experts said those matters had the potential to lead to civilizational collapse. This was a missed opportunity to demand that the candidates who have not authored or signed on to an ambitious proposal to transform our economy and energy infrastructure over a relatively short time frame, like the Green New Deal, explain how they would pay for their more moderate approaches. How will we pay for it is rarely asked in discussions of the military budget or trillion-dollar corporate tax cuts. But the media consistently demands that Democratic candidates offer detailed explanations of how they would finance Medicare for All or solutions to the student loan crisis. And it's the same with climate change. When Bernie Sanders released his climate proposal, the New York Times described it as a $16 trillion climate plan and noted that it was the most expensive proposal from the field of Democratic presidential candidates aimed at reining in planet-warming greenhouse gases in the very first sentence of the story. Newsweek ran a piece headlined, "Here's how Andrew Yang's nearly $5 trillion climate plan stacks up against his opponents." And many outlets promulgated a scary but utterly bogus estimate, apparently just invented by Republicans, that Representative Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez's plan for a Green New Deal would cost taxpayers $93 trillion. If we're to have any hope of mobilizing the effort that scientists tell us is necessary, we have to turn this question around. Because the reality is that even if we set aside the human and biospheric costs of climate change, premature deaths from extreme weather and encroaching diseases, refugee crises, habitat loss, and mass extinctions, the economic costs of allowing the average global temperature to rise even a couple of degrees past the Paris Agreement's limit of 2 degrees Celsius above pre-industrialized levels are simply staggering. According to some estimates, over the coming decades, those costs would dwarf the price tag associated with even the most ambitious proposals to tackle the problem. And that's not even factoring in the new economic opportunities that transitioning away from fossil fuels would confer on countries that take the lead in that process. Although the estimates vary, there is almost as much agreement on this broad point among economists who have studied the potential effects as there is within the scientific community that human activities are warming the planet. In 2015, the Economist Intelligence Unit compiled a peer-reviewed report warning that the asset management industry, and thus the wider community of investors of all sizes, is facing the prospect of significant losses from the effects of climate change. Using the Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change's current warming models, it projected that investors would lose $4.2 trillion in assets by the end of the century, roughly on a par with the total value of all of the world's listed oil and gas companies, or Japan's entire GDP. The researchers added, the average losses to be expected are not only not the only source of concern. On the contrary, the outliers, the particularly extreme scenarios, may matter most of all. In the worst-case scenario they considered, 10% of the world's assets would be wiped out. That's just the losses to investors. The report says that while the value of future losses from the private sector is substantial, this is dwarfed by the forecast harms when considered from a government point of view. Last year, two EPA scientists, working independently of their agency, published a pessimistic study in the Nature Climate Change. They compared the potential economic effects of two scenarios. In the first, humanity misses the Paris Agreement's target by 0.8 degrees Celsius. In the second, we would overshoot that by 2.5 degrees. Looking at how warming would affect 22 sectors of the U.S. economy by 2090, they estimated that we would face additional losses of $224 billion per year in the hotter scenario. But the researchers cautioned that because only a small portion of the impacts of climate change are estimated in their analysis, it captures just a fraction of the potential risks and damages. A new working paper from the National Bureau of Economic Research estimates that if we continue to emit greenhouse gases at our current pace, it will reduce real global economic output by 7.2% by the end of the century. If we meet the goals set forth in the Paris Agreement, that figure will drop by only 1.1%. The difference between those two figures would far outstrip the costs of transitioning to a clean economy now. There is broad agreement in the scientific community that the effects of climate change aren't being distributed evenly, and the study's authors write that Americans will be especially hard hit. Co-author Kamir Mohades, an economist at the University of Cambridge, told the Washington Post that while climate change is costly for all countries under the business-as-usual scenario, no matter whether they are hot or cold, rich or poor, the United States will be one of the countries that will suffer the most. He and his colleagues estimate that we would face a 10.5% fall in GDP per capita if the Earth warms only 2.5 degrees Celsius above the limit set in Paris. While these studies model the effects to the end of this century, businesses' bottom lines are already being hit, and researchers say it's likely to get worse soon. According to Reuters, an analysis of corporate survey data by CDP, formerly the Carbon Disclosure Project, found that more than 200 of the world's largest listed companies forecast that climate change could cost them a combined total of almost $1 trillion, with much of the pain due in the next 5 years. The author of that study, Nicolette Bartlett, also cautioned that it may understate the problem. Most companies still have a long way to go in terms of properly assessing climate risk, she told Reuters. All of these studies offer similar warnings. The IPCC, which a number of leading climate scientists think is overly conservative in its estimates, is working on an updated report about potential economic effects to be released in 2021. But its 2014 report notes that while estimates completed over the past 20 years vary and depend on a large number of assumptions, many of which are disputable, many estimates do not account for catastrophic changes, tipping points, and many other factors, so that losses are more likely than not to be greater rather than smaller than the models suggest. On the other side of the ledger, there is a big potential payoff for saving our environment. A 2016 report by the Global Commission on the Economy and Climate estimates that $90 trillion will have to be spent on infrastructure worldwide through 2030. And while transitioning to a carbon-neutral economy would require more upfront capital, the total wouldn't be significantly more over that time. In their 2018 report, the researchers write that those investments could deliver a direct economic gain of $26 trillion U.S. dollars through 2030 compared to business as usual. It is, of course, morally perverse to frame this debate in cold economic terms. The World Health Organization estimated in 2014 that heat stress, malaria, malnutrition, and other conditions that will occur if we don't tackle the problem could lead to 250,000 excess deaths each year from 2030 to 2050. A study published this year in the New England Journal of Medicine concluded that the WHO's estimate was much too conservative and projected that twice as many people would perish. We shouldn't focus solely on the economics, but if we want to spare future generations, we should turn the how will we pay for it question around on those who aren't calling for a Green New Deal to fight climate change. That article was written by Joshua Holland and taken from the September 30th issue of The Nation magazine. Turning now to another piece on the topic of the climate. This is written by Tom Athanasou. That's A-T-H-A-N-A-S-I-O-U. He writes, Bernie's secret climate weapon. Only a global Green New Deal can succeed. Bernie Sanders' Green New Deal is nothing short of remarkable. It faces the climate change more honestly and comprehensively than any other proposal yet. It calls for government action on an heroic scale, committing the United States to do its fair share to cut global greenhouse gas emissions in half by 2030, in line with the findings of the landmark scientific report by the United Nations Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change, or the IPCC, last October, and outlines a set of bold policies to achieve that extremely ambitious goal. The plan's 10-year $16.3 trillion price tag raised eyebrows among the usual inside-the-beltway suspects, but the Democratic presidential candidate isn't backing down. The fundamental question is, do we respond to the degree that the scientific community tells us we must, or do we not? Sanders told Mother Jones. And from a moral perspective, I think we have no choice but to act. Unveiled on August 22nd, when his presidential campaign visited Paradise, California, the once idyllic town incinerated by last year's record wildfires, Sanders' Green New Deal envisions a 10-year nationwide mobilization centered around justice and equity. It promises to end unemployment by creating 20 million good-paying union jobs with strong benefits. It would prohibit the import and export of fossil fuels. It would ban fracking and mountaintop removal coal mining, and end emissions from the U.S. transportation sector by 2030. It would establish a just transition program so that the workers in the fossil fuel industry don't suffer from the shift to a greener economy, and it would create a separate fund to help communities of color meet the climate impacts to come. Give Sanders his due. This is what a serious climate plan looks like in 2019. But the true genius of Sanders' Green New Deal, its secret weapon for achieving the massive emissions cuts he promises, has gone unnoticed by mainstream news organizations and even most climate activists. He clearly recognizes that eliminating greenhouse gas emissions by 2030, as the Sunrise Movement and other climate activists have demanded, is all but impossible in an economy as enormous and energy-intensive as the United States, at least without paralyzing transportation systems, endangering food supplies, and otherwise triggering a social backlash. But rather than just endorse the 2030 deadline anyway, as some activists insist, or pretend that the science is negotiable, as most politicians do, Sanders has found a credible way around the dilemma. His Green New Deal includes a pledge to help the world's poorer countries move rapidly away from fossil fuel use, reducing their greenhouse gas emissions as part of a transition as deep and comprehensive as the one that would simultaneously unfold in the United States. Specifically, he proposes that the U.S. provide $200 billion to the UN's Green Climate Fund, a program that helps poor countries leave coal and oil and gas behind in favor of solar and other renewable energy sources. This, he says, would reduce emissions among less industrialized nations by 36% by 2030. Combine that reduction with the 71% drop in U.S. emissions by 2030 that Sanders projects under his Green New Deal, and the net effect, he estimates, would be equivalent to cutting U.S. emissions by 161%, far more than the 100% that the climate emergency movement is demanding. This really would work, really could work. There is a vast potential for rapid emissions cuts around the world, but these cuts will not be made in time unless the rich nations not only decarbonize their own economies, but also provide financial and technological support to developing countries that have the desire but not the means to slash their emissions, while, it must be said, continuing their development. Analysts may question whether Sanders' figures pencil out, more on that below, but it remains true that a dollar invested in green energy often goes further in a developing country than it does in the United States. Given that massive emissions cuts may be made very quickly, this matters. Some American activists do understand the game-changing nature of the Sanders plan's international focus. By calling for U.S. support for 36% reduction in emissions by poorer countries by 2030, as well as $200 billion for the Green Climate Fund to make this concrete, the Sanders plan recognizes that unprecedented international cooperation will be needed, with the U.S. doing its fair share, if we're to have any hope of solving the climate crisis, said Brandon Wu, the policy and campaigns director of ActionAid USA, speaking to The Nation. As a rich country, we have a huge responsibility to solve the problem we've made. But this has been missing from most discussions about the Green New Deal, or about U.S. climate action in general. Sanders' plan has the side benefit of offering climate activists a way out of the corner they've backed themselves into with their demand of zero U.S. emissions by 2030. In last year's IPCC special report, Global Warming of 1.5 degrees Celsius, the climate scientists declared that limiting the rise in temperature to 1.5 degrees Celsius above the pre-industrial average required cutting global emissions by 45% from 2010 levels by 2030 on the way to net zero by 2050. Since rich countries pollute much more than average, climate activists argued, they have to shoulder a much greater burden in this effort. In the United States, the Sunrise Movement has repeatedly called for zero emissions by 2030, and in the United Kingdom, Extinction Rebellion has called for zero emissions by 2025. Such demands evoke the scale of action necessary and are simple to communicate. Unfortunately, they are also seen as unrealistic and impossible to meet, even by many climate hawks. This may be why the Sunrise Movement sometimes seems eager to leave them behind. When The Nation recently asked Varshini Prakash, the group's executive director, about the call for zero emissions by 2030, she demurred, saying, "We don't believe that. People make a lot of assumptions." The Sanders' plan enables climate emergency activists to pivot back on the offensive and demand that other candidates match the ambition of his Green New Deal. What makes the Sanders' plan special is that he accepts the hard scientific truth that steep emissions cuts are essential, but he makes such cuts feasible by refusing to limit his vision on how to achieve them. Rather, he adds another hard truth. If humanity is to stabilize the global climate system, rich nations must do their fair share by going beyond domestic action and providing support for emissions reductions in poorer countries. Sanders is the first major American political figure to face the reality and scale of this necessity. His Green New Deal would be a defining act of international solidarity. It would reanimate the Paris Agreement, which is struggling, and cue up a second breakthrough flow of financial aid to poor countries that is necessary to ward off climate catastrophe. Defining a given nation's fair share of emissions reductions is not a trivial enterprise, and while Sanders' 161% number is not definitive, political and ethical judgments inform it. I know this because the figure is based on an analysis by the Civil Society Equity Coalition, which is supported by the modeling of the Climate Equity Reference Project, which I helped to coordinate, though I played no role in designing Sanders' plan. His 2030 domestic reduction target of 71% is based on the work of many experts in many fields, including engineering, economics, and policy. Neither number is beyond criticism, but both are in the right ballpark. And when it's time to review the details, the climate nerds from the Sanders team will, I'm sure, be happy to show their work. Transparency, after all, is part of the job here. The future in which we all actually have a future will involve plenty of debate, and there's no room for hidden assumptions. Which brings us to the 10-year, $16.3 million price tag, to the $16.3 trillion price tag for his Green New Deal. One way to think about this is that it amounts to $1.63 trillion per year, roughly twice what the U.S. spends annually on defense. But Sanders points out, much of the Green New Deal's cost would not be paid by directly taxing ordinary Americans. It would come from making the fossil fuel industry pay for their pollution through litigation fees and taxes and eliminating federal fossil fuel subsidies. Moreover, much of that $16.3 trillion is more properly considered an investment rather than a deadweight cost. He promises massive investments in energy storage, sustainable plastics, and other green technologies, along with ambitious programs to shift U.S. agriculture away from today's industrial model toward regenerative farming, which builds healthy soil that improves resilience to drought and other climate impacts, while slowing global warming by sequestering carbon. Finally, he argues, we must weigh the cost of action against the cost of inaction, which will be very great, far, far higher than the $16.3 trillion. Bernie Sanders' Green New Deal is a potential breakthrough in climate politics. It would reinvigorate the Paris Agreement to limit temperature rise to well below 2 degrees Celsius, a goal that the agreement's signatories, 195 nations, have signed on, will revisit at the UN Climate Summit on September 23rd. Indeed, the Sanders plan and the Paris Agreement go together very well, for they meld the twin imperatives of domestic and international climate justice. Combine the two, and you get a global Green New Deal, an idea that the nation advanced 20 years ago and that today is needed more urgently than ever. That was taken from the September 30th issue of The Nation magazine. And it was written by Tom Athanasou. He is the director of Eco-Equity and is the author of the forthcoming No Easy Way, Climate Emergency, Internationalism, and the New Age of Inequality. This brings us now to the close of another edition of Alternative Press Review. I'm Randy Goodmungen. Thank you for tuning in. Goodbye.